get started since it is bottom of the hour. So first off, we have a City of Compassion item that the mayor wishes to talk about.
Well, we have some presenters here, so I'm going to ask them maybe to come up here at the front and go through. But as you know, that for probably multiple years, that somewhere in my State of the City address, I talk about being, we are a compassionate city, and then how can we maybe accentuate that? And certainly we're driven by people that work in the medical community here, and how do we maybe formalize that a bit? And I've been exposed multiple times with different groups, whether it's Mayors for Peace and others that all kind of have this as their theme. And as it's pointed out, virtually every known religion has that theme of one way or another about do unto others as you would have them do unto you. We've had the Dalai Lama here multiple times and others, and folks like Kathy Ashton here that have really helped bring this forward now. That at the next council meeting, what I'd like to do is to have the document that where we would sign on to an international, which doesn't cost us anything, but make it a bit more formal and also quite a bit more public, not only for ourselves, but for the body that's watching us on TV and the body that's in the audience that night, that we're doing something that isn't just being pulled out of a consent agenda or that nobody even sees. Here's about, we're gonna do it a little bit worse. But that I will let Kathy make some comments.
Okay, I'll show you our logo. We do have a identity now for, we're calling ourselves This Compassionate Rochester MN, to make sure that nobody gets confused, because this is a worldwide movement that we're taking from. I'll refer to some of the things that are in your packet as we go along, just to point out that I think all of you got the packet attached. So what is compassion? It's a compassion universally calls each of us to treat all others as we wish to be treated. It does not take sides. We do not present a proposal for a specific problem, but it is a way of being. So the City of Compassion comes from the worldwide movement started by Karen Armstrong through the Charter for Compassion. So you can read up more about that in this that's in your packet. Today there are at least 70 cities worldwide who have signed the Compassionate City Charter, including Atlanta, Louisville, and Seattle. There are hundreds more that have an initiative. And with this resolution, we will join those who have officially affirmed the charter. Our history in Rochester began almost 6 years ago with the Journey of Peace when I spoke to Mayor Brady, who expressed a desire to make Rochester a compassionate city. The Journey of Peace, as well as so many others in the community, have been consistent in presenting the universal values of kindness, love, and compassion in our community. Last fall, our theme was, "This is what compassion looks like." Our wish was to feature groups and individuals who are already doing compassionate work in Rochester. So as Mayor Brady said, he's consistently expressed compassion as a value in Rochester, spoken of it in each year's message to the city, met personally with the Dalai Lama, and has asked cities and other institutions to take on this important work in today's world, and as well as met with other religious leaders, and continues conversation with other mayors. Since the statement of 2013 U.S. Conference of Mayors, compassion as an effective policy. So that's another thing that we included in your packet. Whereas all of the whereases on here that the U.S. Conference of Mayors stated. So how we built momentum to this point, you may not be aware that out of this conversation in Rochester, Professor Steve Juniman has created a compassionate studies course now in its second year at RCTC. He and leadership at RCTC are beginning the work on declaring RCTC a compassionate educational institution, which is also part of the Charter for Compassion. Steve was in early discussions of our compassionate city. You have all seen the incredible work this year of Mary Alessio and Catholic Charities that resulted in the physical presence, expression of the locks of compassion. This proved to be the catalyst for an incredible group of people, some who are here today, thank you, to do the hard work and to move forward to where we are today. We have also secured the Rochester Area Foundation as our fiscal partner, as we will solicit funds to do some of our activities, some expenses that we have. Now, in your packet also, on the resolution, I don't have the copy of the resolution that you have, but in the paragraph that has the bullet points, we have the overall focus of the Compassionate Rochester MN is the stewardship of the universal values of kindness, love, and compassion. We will focus our efforts in these three areas. Honoring and supporting compassionate thought and action already existing in our community. Second, growing a culture of compassion as a binding force in our community. And third, creating opportunities for meaningful, multi-generational participation in compassionate actions. So we're not creating something to pinpoint a problem and we're going after the problem. Part of the conversation that would come up around this is that Rochester is very resource rich and systems poor. Like there's a lot of resources for meeting the problems here in Rochester, and that we're working in order to create an overall culture of compassion as we look at dealing with all of these problems. And good things that are happening. We also included your City of Rochester core values statement. We pulled this off of the city site that mentions in under respect to treat customers in a personal and professional manner while being firm, fair, and compassionate. We have already visited the idea of compassion, responding as a city with compassion towards its citizens. And our statement. Now there's a statement that is just at the top. It just says Compassionate Rochester MN. And we are being asked to keep in mind with Compassionate Rochester MN, including what being a compassionate community is, a restatement of our focus, our goals and objectives, and questions if we indeed follow the values of compassion in our community, and also realizing that compassion is an inside job. It also involves our personal awakening and cultivating of compassion. So this is a real guideline for if you don't really understand compassion, how it can work in the community, and what it is that we're looking to do. We also have a Facebook page and a website in development. But follow-up work is already planned for this fall and beyond. We have begun the process of inviting all areas of the community to join in a partnership pledge. And this is expressed in areas in the Charter for Compassion. And we have created our language for this, and we have begun that process, and we have just gotten a really amazing response where people say that they want to publicly state that compassion is a value in their workplace, in their organizations, their institutions. These include the arts, business, education, the environment, healthcare, peace and nonviolence, religion, spirituality, interfaith, restorative justice, social services, or women and girls. On September 17th, next Sunday, I will present a workshop on our compassionate city at the Women and Spirituality Conference. On October 2nd, we are sponsoring the showing of a film called Walk With Me, featuring Thich Nhat Hanh and his important compassionate work. We've already sold out the tickets, and we're working really hard to get a few more seats on the American Theater. On October 22nd, this year's Journey of Peace is titled Weaving Compassion, and this is open to the community. An opportunity once again to hear the stories of how we will carry on the work of compassion in Rochester. And on November 7th, we will present a panel at UMR Connects. So we seem to be putting this stuff out there, and we get response. So we ask, what occurs when compassion is declared as a guiding principle of a city? And we are encouraged to develop this in all areas of our lives, in our workplaces, our schools, places of worship, the public square, and as a community as a whole. As individuals, we are challenged to respond. I welcome your questions.
All right, thank you very much. Questions? Mr. Hickey.
I just want to say, Kathy, thank you very much for that update. Everything we had in our pack, it looks really good, looks exciting. I just did have one question. I don't have the exact resolution that we're going to endorse. So what we're endorsing is the charter and that first document that you held up, that four paragraph on page 5 of our packet.
I don't have the one that's printed out that has the signature.
Yeah, not the resolution. We'll look at that. But I just want to make sure that what we're endorsing is that four paragraph charter that you held up first on this.
The Charter for Compassion.
Right.
It's a worldwide movement. And we have actually been declared as intending to become a city of compassion.
Okay.
When you open their communities page, we've been in there for about 6 years.
Okay.
And now there is a page for us. I'm trying to get our logo on there instead of the Rochester flag. They seem to have a little glitch in there. And then they will acknowledge that we are, because they've accepted us.
Sure. Okay.
With our focus, our goals, we filled out the application for them. They've accepted us to move forward with this.
Perfect.
So with the resolution, you will be affirming that.
Mr. Atkins?
There is a second item in the resolution that I was given to prepare, at least. Be it further resolved that the city will infuse and reflect compassion within its policies, procedures, and programming, including the Planning to Succeed Rochester Comprehensive Plan 2040. So that second item is also in the resolution. That will be on the agenda for Monday.
Okay. Thank you.
Anyone else? Mr. Mayor, then Mr. Wojcik.
Just on the light side of that, the mayor of Louisville, Greg Fisher, a few years ago, I was in a meeting with him, and he said they were the most compassionate city in America. And I was next to him, and I said, Greg, how can you say that? Well, we had the Dalai Lama in Louisville. I looked at him, I said, big deal. He's here a lot of times. So, past Seattle has often said that they are the first city in the United States that became a compassionate city. I can't dispute that one way or the other, but no, it's... something I know through the U.S. Conference of Mayors that comes up quite frequent about, just in general, and sometimes it becomes, a word, but I think we all know what it is to be more compassionate to one another. And like I always say, this community, because of the work that's being done here, it becomes almost second nature to us. And the day that we concluded the Locks of Compassion downtown, which we're going to move later yet this month. There was a lady came up to me, they were from farther south, quite a bit south, and she was just talking, and her son was here as a patient and talked about, and this is kind of what it is, she said, she couldn't get over it. She says, we know when we're in Mayo that everybody is so kind, but you're out in the community, whether it's a person serving us in a restaurant, whether it's a clerk in a store, whether it's a taxi driver, whatever, everybody is so kind here. And kidded her a little bit. I said, well, you guys, you're farther south, you have Southern hospitality, we have Minnesota Nice. Yeah. But how that plays out. And I think, going along with this, city of health and healing, we become known even more so as a city of compassion. I think that will It is what we are, and we can brag about it. It's not bragging if it's true.
And make it formal. And make it formal.
Yeah.
And we will be the first city in Minnesota.
Okay. Mr. Wood?
In terms of logistics of this, from reading the materials, my understanding is this is symbolic. There's no commitment of resources actually as part of the resolution.
That's right.
True.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's obviously nothing, no issues with supporting the Charter for Compassion. Ultimately, how we address the basic needs of our citizens, including the most basic, including housing, will determine whether or not we're a compassionate city. So I like this puts the words in the right place, but when we actually see how we stand up and take actions on important issues, that'll determine if we're compassionate.
Right. Anyone else? So this will be on our agenda for the next council meeting. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Mr. Penny for Southern Minnesota Initiative Foundation. An update.
Thanks, Mr. Shaver and members of council, mayor. If you don't mind, I'm going to have Lisa Clark, who's one of our board members, come up and join me at the end of the table. I do have our annual report from 2016 to hand out. We're in the process of compiling our end of the year results to report at our annual luncheon on October 17th. So the next time I'm here, you'll get the updated annual report. But if you care to come to the annual luncheon, you're very much welcome to join us again on October 17th. As you know, because I have the opportunity to present to you every year at about this time, we're a foundation that's been around for 30 years, serving the South Central Southeastern Minnesota region, 20 counties between here and New Ulm on the west, and Winona and Red Wing on the east. We invest currently roughly $5 million a year in three program areas: early childhood, entrepreneurial support, and then helping smaller towns create community funds so they can invest in their own future. In general, we return typically at least $10, and in many cases more than $10 for every $1 raised within the 20 counties that we serve. We hope you agree that that's a pretty good return on investment for the local support that we do receive from cities, counties, corporations, banks, and individuals here in southern Minnesota. In terms of our investments in Rochester, within the last year or year and a half, a good share of that has been in the early childhood space, where upwards of 80,000 plus has been invested in a variety of early childhood programs, including grants to the school district for kindergarten readiness activities. We've also provided incentive grants to a variety of other organizations. We've provided across the region, roughly 50,000 books for early reading programs. A number of those have come to the Rochester community. Actually, roughly about $32,000 worth of those books have been brought for reading programs in your community. Most of those either through the public school system or through the reading center here in town. We also provided with a new program, a Building Blocks Loan Program, a startup loan for a new child care facility here in town called Katie's Kindergarten Preschool and Child Care. We have an awful lot of child care providers retiring every year, and so it's important that we find others that are willing to step into this business. And we are currently providing a significant training through our quality child care program for early childhood providers, and one of those programs and training is occurring here in Olmsted County as we speak. It's business training, but it's also academic training for these early childhood providers so that we can do the best job possible of getting these young children ready for kindergarten. Last but not least, we have an AmeriCorps program with two of those AmeriCorps personnel placed at a site here in Rochester, again, to serve as the teacher aid and help these young kids get ready for the kindergarten experience. We are still recruiting for this year's AmeriCorps class. We have 20 slots that we have been assigned, and we place them in facilities across the region. So I'm just handing that material out. If any of you know of college students, recent graduates that are looking for public service experience. We can take these applicants for a 1 or 2 year stint and place them in early childhood sites to again become essentially a teacher aide. Frankly, some folks in the baby boom generation who are retiring and are looking for something worthwhile to do in their retirement years may also have an interest in this, so I'll just leave that with you for your consideration. In the entrepreneurial space, here again in the last few years, we've provided a number of loans to businesses in the Rochester area, among them Sonics Health. These will either be loans or equity investments. Sonics Health, Thaddeus Therapeutics, GoRoute, Elite Knowledge Solutions, Craniovation, Elast Group, Enviroelastic, which has a presence here, but also in the new industrial park in St. Charles. When you add all of that up, it's a few hundred thousand dollars worth of lending or equity investments that we've made for businesses that are growing here in the immediate area. And then last but not least, we do our very best to partner with other organizations that are working toward economic growth here in the South Central Southeastern Minnesota region, among those Destination Medical Center. We partnered in a variety of ways, but when we did a multi-community leadership series a year ago, we brought in personnel from Destination Medical Center at virtually all of those community gatherings to help them become more aware of how they can connect up with the growth that will ensue from Destination Medical Center. And we're also sort of embedded in the journey of growth process where I and others on my staff serve on committees and task forces there. And out of that process, one initiative grew, and that was the decision to create an equity fund here in Rochester, Southern Minnesota Equity Fund. And though we have our own equity fund, we need other equity funds in the region to partner with, just as we partnered with Mayo Medical Ventures on some of the investments that I just said a moment ago. But we have determined that it would be important for us to also invest in this new fund as another way of providing equity dollars for new business startups here in the Southern Minnesota region. So that's who we are and what we do, and I always appreciate the opportunity to present, and I do thank you for the support that we received from the City of Rochester over time. And with that, Lisa, if you want to add any
I'll just add a couple
thoughts.
Of points in terms of Tim Penny's board or Smith board. I think the amazing part of this board is the reach, or about this about Smith is really the reach in the region, and it's been so encouraging to see the partnerships that Smith has created across this region to sort of lift up the economy in the Southern Minnesota area. And childcare is becoming an issue for Rochester, as you all know, and they're really sort of neck deep in the childcare arena right now. And I've learned a lot about that arena, basically from Smith. And then the final thing I'll just say is, it's one thing to talk about these companies and one thing to hear about them, but when we go out, we actually do tours in Southern Minnesota to actually do meet and greets with these smaller companies, all the communities in the particular area, and that has been so enlightening to see what the realities of some of these smaller communities really, what's really happening in Southern Minnesota. I think we can feel rich and proud in Rochester, and taking a look at what's happening in other communities and the partnerships that you've created with Smith has just been fascinating, and there's clearly more to be done, and I think Smith has just been playing a great role in that. So I again thank the city for the support. Okay.
One thing that occurs to me as I was reading the list, and the thing that's impressive is the diversity of your involvement. One of the things we talk about frequently with DMC and other initiatives, there's a lot of focus on bio and health science, undoubtedly, but I think we all appreciate that we need to cultivate other industry and other forms of economy within our community and region if we're really going to have a truly healthy region. So that's what's encouraging to me, that you know, investing anything from family childcare to small farms to technology, and that's very encouraging. It's a nice symbiotic relationship between what we're trying to accomplish. Biohealth tends to overshadow, I think, oftentimes some of these other very vital initiatives. So thank you
for that. And we do our best to partner up with EDAs and local banks on a number of the loans that I've cited. In addition, and I neglected to mention this, one of the other sectors that we do invest in as local foods, and we've got a growing array of programs in that area, including a brand new Grow a Farm, a loan fund, which is micro lending to small-scale local food producers and processors to help them grow their business, make it more profitable, and that culminates every year in a feast festival that we hold here at the Mayo Civic Center, where we have about 100 exhibitors, and last year we had 1,700 people come through that event, and 40 to 50 institutional buyers came through to sample our local foods. So just another way, in partnership with others, that we're trying to grow the economy down here.
Good. Other questions, comments? Mr. Wojcik.
Well, I always, from the unique perspective that you have on the region, I'd like to ask the question, when you look at a community like Rochester and see the purview of the issues that we have control over, what do you see as the top issues facing Rochester and the region from where you sit?
Well, early childhood is huge across the entire region, and I'll back up just a step to say that because we are a region that is blessed with 12 regional centers, that's different than the other rural regions that are served by the other five initiative foundations. We really have to think hard, and our board is great in helping us do this, about areas of work where our investments can make sense to the large towns and the small towns alike. And that's why we've landed on entrepreneurship and early childhood, because those needs are universal across this region. But I would say that in terms of a growing need, it's really in the early childhood space. We have an awful lot of baby boomers retiring, and we want to make sure that new people come into that profession and are properly trained and supported to do the best they can with these kids. And in the smaller towns, there's also a lack of adequate available child care. So that's something where both here in Rochester and the smaller towns, we have programs that can be beneficial across the region. And the small business startups, you know, if you look at our lending year in and year out, 25 to 30 loans or equity investments annually, it runs the gamut in terms of the type of sectors that are benefited by that programming, but also geographically, these loans get spread across the region pretty effectively into the larger towns and the small towns alike. Local foods is an area of economic growth in this region with a lot of future potential, and that's relevant to both the larger towns and the smaller towns. There are some issues we don't touch, though, because our resources are limited and we have to stay focused, but the workforce challenge is another one, especially jobs that don't necessarily require a four-year degree, or perhaps even a two-year degree, but there are good jobs in the region, and we need to find more creative ways of addressing that. If we had more resources, it might be an arena in which we would invest, but right now it does seem that some new initiatives are programming, just as you've got a new program here in town that's focused on technical assistance and partnerships between the high school and the technical college.
Well, I did my part to support local beer this weekend. So.
Well, and we do have a few local breweries that are loan clients of ours. Not one here in Rochester yet, but several others across the region.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Any other comments, questions? Well, thank you very much for the update.
Thanks
for I'm sure
fun.
We'll
you.
Make this up a little bit later.
Appreciate it.
I don't see Linda here yet. She was probably thinking she was on at 4:10, according to our schedule. So, Mr. Newman, do you want
sure.
to go ahead and start with the budget?
I think that would be just fine. If Dale, would you like to come up and Rachel, if you want? I'll hand these out. I sent you an email relating to this, but I don't know if you all had a chance to read it. Raise your hand if you did.
It's the same thing we received, right?
But Michael. Yes, but in a much better format.
And we have some time yet to make these decisions, but we thought if we had an opportunity to get it to a little earlier, I think we're about one meeting earlier, 1 week earlier than we were last year on some of this, we thought we'd walk through some of this. Unfortunately, we have a tough budget year again with some very large increases in costs, so... we've kind of given you an outlook on that. the three main increases are in the area of salaries and employee costs. The salaries, you know, we're on the last year of a three-year contract, and that's going to go up about $2 million. In addition, Dale mentions it as pensions and benefits, but it's largely health care. There's almost another $2 million increase in that end. There's $2.2 million in employees, actually, and then $2 million in health care. So when we look at that, and then we also, you know, there's a whole bunch of other things that aren't included in there that also will have some increases, such as supplies, equipment, utilities, things of that nature. And just looking at a conservative number on that, Dale used, I think, about a 2.5% inflator on that. That would be another $1 million, which would get you quickly to $5.2 million, which is almost a 9% increase in property tax levy that would take just to cover that. There may be some room to drop some of those costs for supplies, equipment, and utilities. We'll see how that all goes. In Dale's memo, he provided kind of a menu of different property tax increase amounts, and some of the detail on this is on page 3, I think, of what I provided you. It's page 3, page 4. And on the bottom of that page, Dale points out, you know, what a 7% levy increase would do, what an 8%, a 9%, a 9.25%, a 9.5%, and a 9.75%, and we kind of stopped at that point. I think one of the things, and this is something actually Michael's mentioned a number of times, somehow that we lose sight of in the narrative of all this, that there's a lot of other revenues that come into the city, and our costs actually are quite a bit, our operation is quite a bit bigger than a tax levy of $62 million. For example, our general fund for this year is $79 million, and our total governmental operating budget is actually 119, I think it is. Yes, $119 million. But because that, there's some other revenues that come in and help offset that. Dale mentioned that some are LGA, some is the payments in lieu of taxes we get from our electric funds, we get it from our other enterprise funds, and then there's also a lot of revenues we get in from such things as building permits, parking revenues, revenues that come from the Mayo Civic Center, things of that nature. But our operation is a lot bigger than the levy. The levy actually funds a very small portion of our cost. Steve oftentimes points out in the past years that the levy is basically equal to the cost of our public safety expenses. It would cover the police, the fire department. It would cover a portion of our public works department, building safety department. But there's a lot of other things the city does that, you know, are way outside of that actual tax levy. But so this is kind of our first look at this, and we basically just gotten some of the information in the departments on what, you know, their annual budget is, and also what their CIP numbers are for next year. Finance department has a huge job on a budget our size, putting all of that information together, and so they've been just basically getting this information together, and we've been scrambling to get this to you because we had promised we would a week earlier than we did last year. But at this point, you know, from my perspective, I'd probably be in the range of about, for preliminary levy, probably in that 9.5% range, which is about where we were last year. You'll recall that Steve came in with a recommendation that was slightly under 9. The council added a few additional positions and bumped it up, I think, to about 9.1% last year. I would say these last 2 years are a little out of character for the city. I think they're higher than we typically are, and it's mainly we've had a real spike in the number of large insurance, health insurance claims. And that is, I think, Dale and I hope it's somewhat cyclical and will go back down. You remember maybe about 5 or 6 years ago, we actually had a one-month holiday from having employees pay in, I think, for the health care costs because our fund was so healthy at that point. And now it's kind of gone the other way. So I guess we'll have a better feel for whether this is a long-term trend or a short-term trend probably better at the end of next year. Right now we've just got kind of a two-year window where these numbers have spiked, but for both of the last 2 years, it certainly takes a bite out of the money that we would have available to do additional things or hire more staff and things of that nature. So from our perspective, we're kind of in the, I think, wait on some of those things for the 2019 budget, because it looks like I think we're going to have a pretty lean 2018 budget. But that's, I think, from the staff level where we're at, Dale, or would you have any other comments you want to add to that?
No, I listed in that page 4 right here, talking about just some of these other considerations that we've been talking about, and included this vehicle replacement, the IT chargebacks, and we know some of those numbers, but again, our vehicle replacement fund has been drawn down on the fund balance over the years because we aren't earning the interest rates that we used to earn back in the time when that would cover inflation. And we've got new employee position requests. That's only the ones that the department heads agreed in, together that should be put forward to the council. It's $1 million there. There's discussion about the planning department, I think, coming up. The one that I didn't mention that Gary mentioned is this whole expansion of the transit routes. That's part of the whole DMCC discussion and everything. That takes more money also. Tony's got a budget that we need to discuss yet on just how much that's growing. So again, there are a number of things that we haven't hashed out yet that keep adding to this number. And even though the healthcare number is a big number, it's actually half of what the reinsurance company was suggesting that we increase our rates to. Again, we've watched these over the years. I've been here too long, but this is cycled up and down, you know, over the years. And we've put money away to the tune of $2 to $3 million a year, some years too, but right now we're losing money by $2 to $3 million a year. So
overall, it's been a good program for the city, but the last couple of years have been tough.
So anyway, and otherwise, unless you have questions, I guess it's kind of...
So just a clarification, the... 5.2 million, or roughly equivalent of 9.5%, is almost entirely due to some cost increases related to contractual salaries and pension and benefits. In other words, the 5.2 million does not allow for any new positions.
5.2 doesn't, but the 9.5 is 5.9 million.
9.5 is 5.9 million at the bottom of the page. It's like two columns of comparisons of how much additional money will be generated.
Questions, comments, Mr. Wojcik?
Piece of information that I'd like to see going forward is obviously we've supported the personal advisory committees on their rates of increases in pay for the last 3 years, but I'm interested in seeing, you know, looking back 5-10 years, what is the change in total compensation over that time? Because obviously healthcare has spiked quite a bit, as it has for a lot of people, but I want to understand what the real costs of employee compensation is and what it's been for the past few years. And I think the other thing too is what I'm really interested in, how we fund some of our major functions and how we compare to other major regional centers. I mean, I'm not talking like you know, smaller cities, but I'm talking like the Sioux Falls, Fargo, possibly St. Cloud, Madison, those kinds of places, because we have such a fixation on what our levy amount is. But part of that is because we've been unwilling to do other sources of funds. And I prefer to focus on what is the operating cost to the city of Rochester and how does that compare? Because we hear things like from our Parks Department about how minuscule the amount of funding that we're putting into parks is relative to other regional centers. And we don't have that data that we can quantify it on. Gary, a question for you would be, I know it's going to take some time and there's a lot of things going on, but one of the council priorities has been to create a longer-term budgeting. And you've talked about how last couple of years have been particularly bad, but are we going to have anything in terms of looking out 5 years, what we're going to be doing at this point, or is that still a ways away?
Oh, I think that's a bigger project and probably would be something that, you know, could probably be worked on for next year, but... It's not something we can do for this year's budget. I would say the information you're asking for, we can probably get some of that for the budget discussions in December. We won't have it by next week, obviously. But,
understood.
But, you know, there are communities that do multi-year budgeting. I mean, that's something the city can consider. You do get to a point, though, that you've got, there are always a lot of variables involved, and it's kind of like our CIP. Mm-hmm. If you go out the out years, it's just... There's just no way you can do those things. So your only real year in your CIP is year one.
I think one thing that hasn't been clearly communicated to the community, and partly I think the media has kind of dropped the ball on this, is that there's not a lot of understanding that If your city is growing at 3 to 4% in your operating budget a year, that's going to translate to much, much higher property tax the way that we're structured right now. And I think that we need these kind of longer-term budgeting to illustrate some of this a little bit. Because what we're talking about for numbers is not growing the city. It's a reflection of the costs that are not negotiable at this point.
But I will say, you know, there is an offset of at least 2.5% in that levy from new growth in the city, so that does help.
Well, and
our market value has gone up, which is...
The first 7.5% of whatever the increase is will be covered by increase in valuation slash new development.
Right. The overall increase is 7.7%.
Yeah.
The actual just new growth is 2.5%, but the increase in the other valuation is a reflection of the community is mm-hmm. is prospering, but there are some costs that typically go along with that.
So, but you're right. Structurally, the problem is that we have that goes in the general fund, $58 million levy that's covering $120 million cost, and all the other revenue sources like the in-lieu and the LGA are relatively flat. And don't continue to grow like everything else has to.
Right.
So the only thing that can happen is the levy has to go up by a number that seems high for anybody's
And so many times, I know I even heard council members saying this last year that, oh, we're increasing the size of the budget by 9%. No, it was nothing even close to that. But, you know, if we're not careful with how we communicate this stuff, that's what comes across. Now, Gary, I was very judicious in sending you kind of a list of my priorities for the following year. Are you getting that from the rest of the council as well?
Budget-wise?
Yeah.
No, and I think, you know, I just sent it out today, so there's been no real chance to do that. But, you know, if they have ideas, they can send them to us. I will say, you know, it's a fairly thin margin of what we're going to have money to work with, unless you want to go higher than what I'm suggesting, which is 9.5%. That's a pretty high increase already. So.
What I would say is just, you know, no intent for secrecy here. I'm saying fully fund the forestry needs that we need because we have trees falling on cars right now. Address the staffing that our staff mutually brought forward to us. And putting money into roads, and those are the priorities over just maintaining our existing costs. You know, that's what I've put out there. So I hope we have a good discussion on meeting some of those priorities. Do we have any data internally? Do we have anyone who kind of looks at other cities to see what these are? I mean, I might have to get some more students and make them do this for me.
Well, frankly, with the number of projects we have trouble just keeping up with those without doing. There are communities that have people that solely work on budget comparisons, budget analyst positions. We don't have the resources for that. We're busy with a lot of other projects, so. I mean, we can gather that information, but it just isn't like a drop of the hat.
Understood, so, and I think that's where,
I will say over the years, there's been a number of initiatives that we've brought forward, street lighting, all these other different ideas of road funding, and there's been a strong reluctance. I mean, I don't know how many times we've done the presentation on the roads now, but there's been a strong reluctance to do anything but tax levy, because there keeps coming back this discussion of, well, it's just hiding a tax. Well, not really. It actually, a lot of those have built-in escalators based on growth, and so some of that weight then doesn't have to be borne by the tax levy. So I think we've done a lot of the things that we've seen in other communities and tried to bring them forward.
In Minnesota,
but we continue to, and again, it's council's prerogative, but we've had them say, no, we just want to put it on the tax levy. That's what our experience has been.
And we can dust that streetlight utility off. Again, bring that forward into council.
I go into the cycle that everything is on the table.
Yeah.
Other questions, comments?
I'd say if you have, you know, obviously you just received this in some cases here, so if you have input before the next meeting, you can provide it to us. But from our perspective, that's kind of where we're at this point. The other thing you need to do also on the 18th is set a total budget number. It really is not restrictive. It's somewhat a meaningless number. It's a total budget number, and you do have to publicize it at the end.
Total levy number?
Yeah.
No, total budget number.
Total budget number.
Yeah.
Okay.
And last year we used number 270, which we knew was 270 million, which is higher than what we ended up with. We were at about 238, and I may end up suggesting the same number again, because obviously if you have a when you add the CIP program in there, the number can vary way up and down, and I want to get a good look at the numbers first before we kind of fix on what the final number is.
One last thing, in your numbers in here, do you have factored in any potential changes to the outside agencies into that yet?
No, it's okay. Right now those are not very significant amounts. I mean, cumulatively,
okay.
They, you know, it's 5,000 here, 5,000 there, kind of thing. So
okay.
There's one that may be 30,000, but it's really not a huge increase. That's okay. Reflected in here at this point.
Sounds good.
Any other questions?
All right. Anything else for the moment? So we'll have some discussion on the 18th.
Great.
All right. Thank you. All right, Linda, we jumped ahead because we were moving forward.
I was wondering if you saved the best for last.
There you go.
That was definitely
all right.
Good afternoon, council members. Before I start with my presentation this afternoon, I would like to introduce a couple of my colleagues that have joined us at the City Hall meeting. So Jennifer Simpson, right there. Jennifer, I don't know if you've met her. Jennifer is a senior HR consultant. While she serves all the leaders in the city of Rochester, she works primarily with the library, fire department, and public works. Next to Jennifer is Jason Long. Jason is one of our newer members. With the funding that he gave us a year ago, we were able to hire Jason as our safety administrator. So Jason is focusing heavily on safety initiatives across the city. And last but not least is Christine Soto. Christine works in the benefits administration portion and also working in the area of workers' compensation. So I sent a variety of information to you last week, and so my intention today really is just to have a discussion about some of the key priorities for the HR team, the work that we did on our vision statement, some of the accomplishments we achieved, and then I will conclude my conversation or my key points with the key challenges that our HR team continues to face. So just by way of introduction, I sent you a picture of the future is what we call it for an HR team. It's really important in HR, I felt, that we have a common understanding of where we're going as a team. And so we talked about it, but I don't know that it always resonated with everybody in the same way. So a subgroup of the HR professionals came together and we developed this picture. And on the picture, you will see four different platforms, one with core services, talent management, valued partner, and culture. So for each of those platforms, we describe them, we describe what that means and how we look if we're successful. And then to support that, we also developed our guiding principles, which is really about the character of our team and what we hold ourselves accountable to. All of these documents together help us with decisions that come to HR. There's a barrage of requests that come through for our support and our services. And by having a common focus and understanding about what it is we're trying to do, this helps guide us in making those decisions. So just by way of definition for the core services side of the platform, basically, that's the foundation of what we do in HR from a transactional side. Complex, heavily dependent on technology, but it's one of those areas where the employees just about expect 100% accuracy. So when it comes to payroll performance, workers' compensation, or benefits administration, there is no leeway for errors. So we spend a lot of our time performing those services. I will say, as most HR professionals would say, that if you don't do core services right, it's difficult to build credibility in any other product or service that you provide. One of the next most important things that we do for the city, obviously, is talent management, which involves recruitment and selection. We spend a considerable amount of our time defining what the position is that we're looking for, what are the competencies we want to see in the City of Rochester employees, and then in the selection process, making sure that we align those candidates with the competencies and the core values of the city. So a tremendous amount of time goes into talent management and onboarding these individuals. And then once they're here, also the performance management process, how we coach and groom as we go forward. Moving on up the platform too, I will say that as the bottom platform is really inward focused, as we move up the platform, it becomes outward focused. The next platform is Value Partner, and this is really about helping all of our departments reach their full potential relative to their strategic goals and objectives. And it's also about helping them with any type of sensitive conflict situation that surfaces, or labor relations, or training and development, or succession planning, as you often refer to it. And lastly is culture. If we do all of the platforms below, we'll impact the culture. We'll have change-ready employees that collaborate across departmental lines, who are highly engaged, and when we do that, the citizens of Rochester are served very well, in my opinion. So, under each one of those categories, I'd like to tell you a little bit about what we've accomplished. Under core services, last year we implemented an electronic employee self-service, meaning prior required to employ self-service, we mailed out a barrage of documents to our employees, asked them to all fill them out, take them back into HR, and then we key all this data in. With employee self-service, our employees, at least in most of our departments, excluding RPU and the library, because we don't have unique systems yet where we can reach those employees, they go online, they make any changes they want during the enrollment process, but not only during the enrollment process, but any time during the year, they can make changes to their benefits without coming to us and having to get forms and documentation. All we have to do is audit the transactions. It's been a really good change for our HR department. And I hope as we move forward, we'll be able to get RPU and the library on board as well. We continue to evaluate new technology in HR. We right now have what we call technology fragmentation, meaning we have a variety of different systems in the city, from our performance management system of Halogen, our HRIS database of JDE. We have a timekeeping system of Kronos. None of these systems are married to each other. We use NeoGov for recruiting, and they don't talk to each other. So sometimes that requires duplicated efforts on our part to make them all come together. Or when we're trying to mine information, we're using multiple sources to get that data. So our goal would be to streamline that process and gain some efficiencies. So more information to come on that as we move forward, both from a budget standpoint and a technology standpoint. And of course, we continue to use LaserFiche from a document imaging standpoint. Our goal is to become less dependent on paper and using more electronic means of documentation. We have processed 2/3 of our personnel files are now electronic, meaning the medical file and the performance management side are electronic. We still have to work on the payroll side, and hopefully we'll get that done in the next year. In addition to that, LaserFiche is great not only for the storage part of it, but it's also great for analyzing the process side of it. So as you may recall, I came forward earlier this year and shared that we had won an award from LaserFiche, the organization, for our streamlining our tuition reimbursement process, which is totally online now, very efficient from what we used to do by meeting the paper. So it's been great from that standpoint, and now we're also looking at it also from an onboarding standpoint, getting information out to employees quicker, faster, and better than what we currently do today. So that's been a very good thing. The Affordable Care Act also brought challenges last year in that it added another layer of reporting requirements that we didn't have before. Behind the scenes, there was a tremendous amount of support and resources that were dedicated to getting that reporting function complete. We were able to do that. We were very happy. That was a happy dance in HR when we got that done. And then lastly, in the area of workers' compensation, we always monitor our workers' compensation activity. Excuse me. And I sent out some information on that. I thought a couple pieces of information you'd like to look at. From 2004 to 2017, the majority of our worker compensation injuries happen in, 1/3 of them, to be frank, happen with sprains, strains, and tears, as we call them. Another 17% happens from abrasions, bruises, and scratches, and another 16% comes from slips, trips, and falls. So as Jason and Christine continue to work on workers' compensation issues, we look at ways of training our employees to eliminate those types of activities. Of course, we'll never alleviate all of those, just by given the nature of some of the work that we do in fire and police, and even to a certain extent in public works, but the goal is to bring the trend line, the cost trend line down, if we can, and more importantly, to keep all employees safe. And then another piece of information I shared with you was the total claims incurred for workers' compensation. So you can see we've had some pretty heavy years, and as we talk about budget, this is always on my mind, is any way that we can reduce these costs is really good for the city of Rochester. So our trend line for actual claims paid is trending downward this year, even though we don't have a full year completed, but the goal for certainly Christine and Jason as they continue to work is to bring that down. Again, we'll never come all the way down, but if we could get it, I would like to see it under $300,000. That'd be an awesome goal if we could reach that. From a talent management perspective, obviously, we spent a considerable amount of resources in the city administrator recruitment process, all the way from identifying do we want to use an outside recruiter, to working through the process, to all the groups that were involved in the interviews. Even though we used an outside recruiter, there was a tremendous amount of support that had to come from HR to make that happen. So that was one of our priorities, and I think we landed at a good spot with the decision we made with Steve Ryan. In addition to that, moving forward in the next 1 to 3 years, we anticipate some pretty strong turnover in the department head level. So again, we'll spend a lot of time in those processes to make sure that they're well defined and that we really think about what it is we're looking for in the future leaders of the city of Rochester. One other thing that we did in some of the previous committee of the whole meetings I've been at, you've talked about diversity. So I think in order to make inroads with diversity, we have to do more outreach. We need to be meeting with partners in the community to find out what is it that we can do as a city organization to help garner more applicants, minority applicants in particular. So because we couldn't get staffing from one more person, what we did is we took some of our full-time employees, took them down to a part-time level, took the FTE equivalency and hired another body to focus on recruiting. In 2016, we hired over 100 employees or promoted over 100 employees in the city of Rochester. That's about 2.5 full-time equivalents. That's a workload for the 2.5 employees, and we have about dedicated resources on paper from a job description standpoint. We have about 1.5. So we are still a little bit short, but we're really extremely excited. We've hired Samantha Duke to come in and help with recruitment. So we hope to take that to a new level again in 2017. And then lastly, some of our time is, of course, spent on policy development, and one of the more critical policies we developed last year, of course, was the social media policy. So that took a little time to research and move forward. Under the valued business partner, we have talked about succession planning. It's one of the key priorities for you as a council. We don't really talk about it from the terms of succession planning, but we do talk about it in terms of leadership development. So in 2016, and now again in 2017, we offer a very extensive leadership class for senior leaders in the city to help groom them for future openings that may occur. It's a very involved 7-8 month process they go through. There's classroom work, there's accountability groups, there's assessments involved, and then there's actually homework that they perform in order to practice some of the skill sets that they're learning. In addition to that, some of our HR teams, including Jennifer, have developed leadership luncheons where, for those that aren't in that extensive program, we offer what I would call soundbite training, where we bring them over lunch and we talk about relevant HR topics such as employee engagement, onboarding, recruitment, whatever it might be. We've done team building training, Jason's done safety training, we've done some customer service training, just to name a few of the different items. In addition to that, we've participated in strategic planning sessions with our departments. Tim and Jennifer in particular spend a considerable amount of time participating in our management meetings so that we can stay connected to the departments and figure out how we can continue to best meet their needs as we move forward. And then moving on to the top rung, again, culture. Every 2 years we completed an engagement survey in the city of Rochester. And so we did that early on in 2017. So I sent out the overall summary for you. Obviously, the green bars on that page indicate agreement among the employees, and the yellow portion represents neutral feedback, and the red represents unfavorable feedback. There's 13 different dimensions that we looked at, and the engagement score overall for the city moved up from 78% to 80%. So that's very good. We had a 69% response rate from our employees, which is still fairly healthy, and I think the 80% score is very healthy too. When most articles you read across the nation will talk about having engagement levels at the 33 percentile, so we should feel fortunate that we're at the 80% mark. And then there were 12 other dimensions. Job challenge has to do with having work that's exciting, where there's skill alignment, where employees like what they do. Customer focus is really about how we deliver internal and external customer service. Performance enablement is about having the right information and the tools to do your job. Reward for performance is about compensation and benefits. Learning and development is having the ability to meet your career goals in the city and having the right training. Fair treatment is treating employees with dignity and respect. Leadership, vision, and direction is having employees want to know where we're going as an organization and how they fit into that bigger picture. Teamwork is about feeling part of a team and then collaborating across departments. Business process performance really is about operational efficiency, and then communication, how well we communicate across the organization, having the right information in order for the employees to do their jobs. So anything that was above a 75% is considered a strength, so we have a number of strengths. Anything between 50 and 75 is considered a moderate strength, and anything below 50 is considered an opportunity. So our opportunities really, well, even though they're not below 50, but our opportunities lie in process improvement and communication, and I should have mentioned survey utilization, doing something with the data that we have. So that is part of that information. Also, I sent you an HR dashboard, which basically just shows you the information that we track on an ongoing basis. I think one of the interesting statistics on that form shows the number of people eligible for retirement. There was 287 people at the end of 2016 that were eligible for retirement, full retirement, or partial retirement, I think I have that correct. So that's a lot of turnover we could experience in the city moving forward. That trend has not significantly changed. What was a bit of a difference last year is we had fewer retirements than we typically do. It's not uncommon to see 30 or 35, and we only had 17 last year, which was extremely low. So that's a little bit about some of the key accomplishments we had, things we've done. I would say from a challenge standpoint moving forward, the challenges that we face as an HR team, even though I'm very appreciative of getting another FTE in Jason last year, our workload is still heavy, again, for the size organization that we are and for the complexity that we have with all the bargaining units. The workload is extremely heavy in our HR department. There's not a lot of extra cushion, so work-life balance can be a challenge sometimes for us. And meeting the needs of our departments can sometimes be a challenge. The second challenge, I would say, is technology. As I mentioned before, we have fragmentation. We use a number of systems. We can achieve greater operational efficiency if we streamline the number of software or the number of systems that we use. So, and along with that, of course, comes funding, which I would say is our third priority, having sufficient funding to do what we need to do. So that's a little bit about what we've done. I certainly will turn it now and open it up for any questions that you may have.
All right. Questions, comments? Mr. Campion.
We've been in other hats I wear dealing with similar kind of organizational balances with a lot of people set to retire and how we're working to transition some of that knowledge to some of our kind of identified early leadership prospects and stuff like that. And I'm wondering what are we doing to develop roles for people to move in that can help them continue to develop? So the training classes are great. And yet, I know from personal experience, no training can get you ready for having to actually hold the position and kind of operate in a daily kind of capacity. So what are we doing with the kind of role responsibility charts to say, we know we're kind of on the verge of possibly some significant retirements. Can we open up opportunities to get people job training, not just training,
well,
job training?
It gets a little tricky in a union environment because you need to have open competitive processes. So when you start selecting people for future positions, it looks like you no longer have an open competitive process.
Sure.
So we try to be very careful in respect of our union contracts. So our option has been to train people in the classroom and to give them experience that they need. So I would say that many of our departments are really good about giving experiential training to the employees so that they do have some experiences in those areas without selecting out who is the next incumbent to have that position.
Sure.
I would say another strategy that we're trying to do more and more in the city as we have key leadership turnover is that we're hiring early so that there's a overlap between the new incumbent and the departing employees so that they can train and help for those help migrate them into the organization. So that's some of the solutions that we currently have had. It is a challenge. There's possibly more we could do from a competency alignment standpoint. We have not gone there yet, probably because of workload.
One follow-up. So I don't know what our limits are in terms of HR law, and I'm sure you'll steer me correctly. But in terms of working out retirement plans with the heads of the different departments, is that something we're allowed to discuss with them? In terms of establishing their timelines for retirement?
Yes, we can always ask, and if they're willing to share, then we can. If they're not,
do we have those conversations?
Yes.
Okay, and is HR the lead of that?
I think it comes from the city administrator or our office. Sometimes in finance, from a planning standpoint, I would say from those three audiences it occurs.
I would like to work to consolidate that to a well-known point going forward, because that's one of those things where I feel bad when people don't feel as though somebody cares, and I would worry that something might fall through the cracks if we have a lot of people who kind of have responsibility for it versus having someone tasked with having those conversations or at least asking those questions so that we can be certain that the full breadth of our experience is being surveyed for their plans, because this obviously is a huge, huge challenge for us. And so watching this happen slowly is one of those things where I think we have an opportunity right now maybe to catch our breath, hopefully, as people still are laying those plans, and it would be nice to catch up so that we're not caught off guard as more people, because I don't want to keep people here long. I would love to, so in some degree, but if people, I find it kind of a balancing act between keeping people kind of against their best wishes to go pursue their life dreams and other dreams they have. So
yeah.
I would just like to know that we have someone who's doing it so that what I don't want necessarily is like a individual council members having discussions and trying to come back and get some consensus. That's really messy versus having someone who's responsible for doing it and being able to get kind of a readout for that. So I don't know if that makes sense.
Yep. It does. And I would say that many of our top leaders in the city are very aware of the impact that their departure has. And so they're very good about coming forward, even if we haven't had that conversation, and sharing what their plans are. So if they're going to go on an early retirement, for example, they would see it. Now, I will also tell you, on the other hand, there are people that absolutely don't want anyone to know what their plans are. So we have to be respectful of that as well. So I think, for the most part, we've done a pretty good job of having those conversations.
And I would agree with Mr. Campion in that I think it's good to coordinate and consolidate that effort. We certainly don't want to run afoul of legalities in terms of what you may or may not ask. And we know that's something that I deal with frequently. And then a question, and then Mr. Hickley, do we offer any in-service classes or informational sessions for those that might be considering retirement to kind of explain all the ins and outs and so forth?
Well, MSRS comes out occasionally to the city. We schedule those, and then Christine on our team will meet with individuals personally to walk through all the steps for retirement, and does a very nice job of handling that process.
All right.
So
there's
a mechanism in place.
All right, Mr. Hickey.
Thank you for the update. I appreciate all the information. I appreciate the amount of information that you sent out ahead of time. It's nice to have read through it, and then as you presented, it makes more sense and kind of fill in, so we appreciate that. Now, as we look ahead for retirements and trying to plan and forecast and such, do you have any feel? So if the past year we were at like half the traditional or the more recent rate of retirements, do you have any feel for, you know, what the cause of that might be, or it's hard to say?
No. I don't have it. In fact, Christine and I were working on this the other day, and it was puzzling to me why we had such a low number. Yeah. It might just be a fluke.
Sure.
Usually we're trending upwards, and any time that the total retirement population number starts climbing, you should expect more.
Sure.
So I don't really have... Christine, do you have any reason to expect that? I actually don't know. It just is a choice, I guess.
Okay.
Some people may feel they're not ready to retire, or they want to work, they have something to offer yet. It could be a variety of reasons, but I do not have a handle on that.
Okay, just thought I'd ask.
And it's the first year I've seen it, I think, that low, I think, since I've been here. So it is a little puzzling.
Mr. Campion?
Is that... I think we all have similar questions. The one other side that I feel like is at the budget conversation we just have is kind of bringing up is our healthcare costs and other costs associated with retirements that are going to happen. Are you guys involved in the financial planning for estimating the number of people we'll see retire? How does that work out?
Finance does a portion of it from the payroll side of it. We do an estimate based on the recognition side of it.
Okay.
So we generally project probably 10 to 15% a year in retirements.
But there's no effort to highlight likely retirements.
We do.
Finance
does.
Okay.
It's in the budget.
And we qualify like the costs associated with those retirements.
We don't list names, but we list things that have been suggested or told to us that they're likely considered.
So when we send out, I think, Dale, when you send out the budget information, there's a question there, anticipated retirements. So if I have people on my team that were close to retirement, I would have those conversations. I'm assuming almost department heads or division leaders do that across the departments.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right, anyone else? Mr. Mayor.
Diversity, that one. We've been challenged with our boards and commissions and trying different things, and I'm not sure how successful that's been, but... Also, the other day when I was, I think, driving up the city somewhere listening to NPR and interviewing the Brendan Sebelius, who's the education director for the state of Minnesota, and they're talking about school boards throughout the state. Every one of them has a problem that they have nowhere near the reflection of what the community they're serving, school boards and even staff. And so, you know, it's not to say, well, sorry, we can't do anything about it. Do we do anything with either within the city of Rochester? Is there any organized group that's going out and at trade fairs or whatever to encourage people to apply to work at
No, but we do hope Samantha will fill that role for us moving forward, Mayor. That's part of the agenda that we have for her is for outreach.
This is a challenge for everybody.
You need to advertise more broadly.
Well, we advertise broader, from a broader perspective, but I'm not sure that's still... what's challenging for us in HR is identifying as a minority is a voluntary option. And
true.
We know we hire minorities that don't want to self-disclose their minority, mm-hmm. even though we visibly can see their minority.
True.
So
true.
It's very difficult because I'm not sure that our numbers really reflect what we have in the city because people don't voluntarily want to disclose that. So and you can't require that. But yes, I think we can hopefully make a few inroads in that. And I should say we are making inroads in the police department and various departments mm-hmm. where there's more recruiting going on. I do think that Roger and Tim Comstock working over there have done some nice work in getting someone more a diverse audience, I would say, from the days.
Can you get us...
Go ahead.
Sorry, I find that fascinating, but I don't know much about the efforts they're going to. Is that something that's best to request from them, or are you familiar with the efforts they're going through?
Well, you mean like in the police department?
Yeah, you said they're doing something. I'm just...
They do perpetual recruiting, and they have cultural competencies that they recruit for. And Jennifer, correct me, even in the fire department, we watch for that to a certain degree in our interview process. So that's one of the things they've been trying to ask about, and I think we've made some inroads there.
Okay.
But we have a larger pool of candidates for those jobs, too, so it's a little bit easier to get... minority candidates in particular in the door. And they interview a large pool. Jennifer just got through a process where they interviewed 50 candidates. So that's a lot of interviewing going on.
All right. Anyone else? Well, thank you
thank
for
you.
The information. Very thorough.
Thank you.
That brings us to other business. Is there any other business for this afternoon?
Well, I brought up one, but I didn't know that two of our council members were not going to be in attendance. I should have figured Mark was gone with the Vikings game tonight. I put on the issue of planning. I don't know that it's urgent for you to talk about it. You can if you would like. It's probably more critical for us to reach a decision on that than the county. I mean, their cost for an employee is merely overhead, where ours is actually would be the salary if we're going to do that. So. I guess I'd ask for you as a group to decide, do you want to talk about this now or you want to put it on a couple of weeks from now?
The planning position?
Yeah.
Personally, I'd like to talk about it in context with our other positions. I think we have to prioritize based on what we're now hearing on budget. Just my thought.
I think it would be better if all of you were here because there has been kind of a, this is an issue you're not in agreement with on from what I found in our discussion last time. So,
a couple things I'd like to see is I'd like to see our PASC representatives bring us a recommendation as well, since they're the ones that are overseeing that body and includes not only these positions, but it also includes how that organization is structured and how it can be more functional. And these have been positions that we have struggled with for a very long time, so 2 weeks will continue to propagate the issue, but at some point we need to make a decision. And what I point to is you gave us kind of two options. One is...
Well, I gave you a broader list, but based on what I heard, it was probably down to two.
So basically what I'm hearing is that if we're going to pay for this position, we take them and just put them in administration. That's off the table, that they become a city employee. That wasn't included in your list.
No, but it was in my earlier list.
Earlier list?
Yes, before we had our first discussion. It was on there. My feelings on it, I do think it makes more sense from my perspective for it to be a county employee and be under the planning director. Obviously, if at some point the city changes things and says they are going to have their own department, then that position would, the funding for that position would go away and it would fund a position in the city. But at the present time, I think that'd be that's my suggestion. You can agree or disagree with it, but that's my position.
Mrs. Johnson?
No, I'm just listening. I didn't make any indication that I wanted to talk.
I thought you raised your hand. Mr. Campion.
I think with the budget we have now, I agree with the idea of putting all the positions side by side. I think that there's a reality of that when we talk about compassion and understanding, we also have to realize that the tax levy is part of being compassionate and being able to afford to live here. And putting those positions side by side to me is the way we're going to have some discussion about the relative merits of adding a position or not. You know, how do you weigh an arborist versus a planning position? I don't know. I think that takes a little bit of art as well as science, but I think we have to put them up and talk about them at the same time. And PASC and that activity has been halted per discussions with the county. They basically want to, I think there's some desire to establish the working relationship before that moves forward. I've been somewhat supportive of that conceptually. I'm happy to talk at length about my opinions on planning positions, but I figure the council pretty much already knows my position on that. So I do think we need to have the conversation, but we probably need to have it in light of this new information we got, which is going to have some ramifications. I'm sorry to talk, you know, all the departments know that. It's easy to talk earlier in the year, and then you get numbers that are a little bit unsettling and things you didn't know about. You have to react and be reflective and respectful of that new information. Otherwise, that's not good policy.
So I would say I don't think there's any harm in waiting to discuss all the positions.
Sure.
Together. It would be just fine.
Let's do that. I'm happy to hear from other council members if there's other thoughts on it. But, you know, we've operated this way for a long time. I think in the midst of $2.2 million worth of, $1.9 million worth of health insurance and pension changes, it's hard to justify a significant reordering of the standard operating procedure on other fronts while we're also trying to tackle that deficit. So, food for thought.
All right. Anyone else? Any other topics?
Other topics?
Mr. Wojcik.
So I was looking at the upcoming list of topics for this meeting, and two things that I'm looking for an update to, and I bring it up now because the people are going to be here next week, is I'm interested in the update of where the comprehensive plan sections 1 and 2 stand in terms of implementation and where section 3 stands in terms of completion. So I don't need it now, but if that's something you could work in, so you're presenting next week as well, right?
We are, but my intent is to address that at the end of the month.
At the end of the month?
Yeah, at the end of September.
I would say next meeting I'm questioning whether there'll be enough time for it anyway. If I'm just going to have Nitzie here.
Well, as long as, so that would be the last committee meeting of the month then?
Yeah, but if we can.
And the reason I bring this up is it's not on the list right now. So if we're good with adding it to the list, then I'm good with that. The second thing that I did not want to let slip is I believe everyone received a copy of the report from the EDF fellows.
The what?
The EDF fellows. The folks, the interns, one was with Public Works, and I think the other was with Parks, was it? There were some substantial positive net present value savings activities that could be recognized in that area. And I want to specifically get that on the agenda as well, so we actually formalize some action based on that, because there were some reports that were kind of there were some things in there that were kind of no-brainers.
When did this come?
Yeah.
I don't think I got it.
December of last year?
No, this was a couple weeks ago.
October 16th, he's on the agenda for the update.
That's through Richard then, or who is that through?
Kevin.
Kevin will do it.
Kevin's going to do that?
Yep, on October 16th.
These items are items that the payback is such that expeditious handling would be wise.
Could you resend that to us?
Just so you know, I didn't put that in the entire thing in the CSC.
Who can send that to
just
us?
So that we didn't lose a placeholder anyway. Okay. So okay. It is in our capital improvement plan requested budget.
All right. I just asked him to resend it. Yeah. It's the council. I can't find it in my inbox.
Yeah. Well, we'll certainly resend it for part of the agenda anyway. So.
Yeah, I'm not ringing a bell. All right.
And then last other topic for me, I guess, who have we executed the contracts with in terms of outside agencies at this point? Do we have them executed with?
Well, you're going to have to approve them.
Yeah.
They're all ready.
The process?
It's basically pending budget approval for the most part, really.
Okay.
The contracts are all there. Everybody's signed off that they're okay with the wording and everything like that. The ones that you guys approved.
Well, and I do want to chase down and make sure that, do we have the bylaws from the organizations on file now?
there'll be an attachment for all the
Because I do want to hash out if there's disagreement over them. I want to make sure that we accept what is the actual current bylaws. So, but understand that that's still coming then.
Yep.
Okay.
All right. Anything else? All right. Thank you. We're adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Further
affiance.
There's legalese there.
There is. That is real legalese. I've seen it.
Way on affidavits.
Yeah.
Can you just find this last page to me?
Yep, I totally can.
So if I remember, it was an HR update.
It
was the 2018 some preliminary budget.
Taxes payable 2018.
But for the 2017 property tax year? But when you say that, and you say that we're realizing that value, some of that is they've changed the value on an existing property.
So we subtracted 2.5 from 7.7.
2.5 is the range. 2.5 is random. So we're saying that our existing taxpayer is going to see a 5.21% increase.
I talked to her about last week. I'm like,
in their value. And if that's if we do zero, they'll see that.
So that increases the value. That doesn't necessarily translate to
right.
It depends on whether it's commercial property, whether it's
I remember this now. There's a tax capacity is going up by 5.21%.
No, the estimated value.
Somebody on Facebook posted. So.